Hey cousins, you were listening to Revolutionary Hood Rap with Kim Young, a dope black social worker, and welcome back. Y'all, I am grateful to be back on the microphone with y'all this week and in a much better headspace than I was last week when, I recorded and released the episode. I've been sleeping, beyond sleeping. I've been moving my body more, which is incredibly important for me to do, and I guess I gotta stop bullshitting. I know that I feel better when I move my body consistently and regularly beyond just like the yoga, but like sweating. So I've been back to sweating, and so that has been good for the body and good for the soul. I have also gone down this enormous rabbit hole of the Atlanta boot girls. Do y'all know about the ATL boot girls? The strippers that wear masks and they get called out to the scene to take boots off of people's cars. Like, people just know the number. They charge them like $50 or $75 to pull up to wherever the car is parked with a boot on it. They got the keys to the entire city. Talking about like the key to every single boot in Atlanta. So they pull up and they unlock the boot and like free people's cars and leave a boot right there on the people's property. Y'all, I have been in a rabbit hole watching every video that I can possibly watch about the boot girls. And I guess at this point, people can't. Like, they're not as visible as they used to be. So I don't know if shit didn't got hot on the block. But with the, because you know, they got him a little attorney or whatever, a little white man, a white attorney. And the attorney on the little Vice documentary that I watched was like, hey, they're not breaking any criminal laws because, you know, they don't take the stolen property or take the property, meaning the boot that is privately owned. They leave it right where they take it off from. It's like they're not breaking any criminal laws. But I got a feeling that the boot girls be scamming or something like that, allegedly. And so that could be why they just, you know, on the low right now. But I'm going to tell you right now, watching the boot girl clips and documentary on Vice on YouTube, that has been good for my mental health and my spirit, as well as Love is Blind. That restored my entire soul. And then now I think I have a new serial killer podcast that I'm going to get into. I don't even know if it's a serial killer podcast or just a crime podcast about all the felonious activity in Florida, because y'all know Florida is a special place. So yeah, feeling good, feeling better. And shout out to all of y'all for holding me down in ways that I am aware of and unaware of. I appreciate y'all deeply. Look, we're going to bypass all the revolutionary news for the week because the guest that I have for y'all, we talk so damn long because, you know, when two Capricorns, when we get together and you feel comfortable, you get to talking. Contrary to folks' belief, like, oh, y'all don't talk. Y'all real. Y'all keep it to yourselves. Y'all real secretive. Yeah, like, if we don't know you, if we don't like you, ain't got shit to say to you. But when you know somebody and you like them, you talk hella long. And so that's exactly what happened between me and the guest that I have for y'all this week. So let me go ahead and introduce him and jump straight into our conversation because it was good as hell. So the guest for the week is Devin Lewis Buchanan. And so Devin was once a competitive athlete during his collegiate years and seized an opportunity to audition for the Oakland Raiders in 2012. Yes, you are hearing that correctly. Me, a San Diegan and Charger fan, sat down and talked with somebody associated with the Raiders because y'all already know how we feel about them, you know. Anyways, so Devin pursued his lifelong aspiration of joining the NFL. And despite the initial setback of being cut from the team, Devin confronted the pivotal question of like, what is next? What do I do? This question led Devin down a path of discovery as he transitioned into the realm of child welfare, where he found a profound sense of purpose and service. It was within the framework of social work that Devin discovered a beacon of direction amid uncertainty. As life took its twists and turns, Devin found himself reconnected with the Raiders organization during their move to Las Vegas from Oakland under the banner of the Las Vegas Raiders as the director of alumni relations. This return marked a significant milestone in his journey and had him relocate, you know what I'm saying, to Vegas. And so today, Devin is the Director of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion for the Raiders organization. Y'all, this was such a phenomenal conversation, and I feel so honored that Devin saw fit to talk to me because, you know, we don't be talking to any and everybody, and he let me know that a couple different times. And if anybody understands that, trust me, I do. And so I'm going to go ahead and be quiet and transition us into this conversation with Devin.
Boom. We in here.
I'm so excited to have you join me on the podcast for this episode because, you know, and I've shared this a couple of different times on here. I only like to talk to people that I want to talk to. Like, folks be reaching out trying to be like, oh, can we have a conversation? I'd be like, about what? And I've really been trying to think through, like, who are some dope Black and brown people who have these letters behind their name that went through a social work program that's just doing things and probably has a story that people need to know? And I was like, I got to reach out to my fellow Capricorn. That I got to reach out to my fellow Capricorn to be able to have this conversation. So I'm so grateful that you said yes. And welcome, welcome, welcome.
Listen, I appreciate, one, you reaching out. And I ain't gonna lie, I think I said it in my response. I was like, I've been waiting on this one. You know, I'm the same way as you. Everybody don't social work, you know, you know, to that capacity. So you know, definitely want to give you your flowers. I've been a longtime follower of your work, you know, especially when I was in the School of Social Work and, you know, just seeing, you know, individuals who are doing and bringing their own flavor to the field. To me, that was so encouraging because, again, we're navigating some spaces that don't really, you know, have us in mind as we're, you know, creating, in a sense, you know, this passion work in the sense that we're, you know, signing up for. So definitely want to give you some, you know, your kudos, your flowers, because the way in which you social work is truly inspiring. I think that speaks to the volume of people who seek you out, you know, for your feedback, for your insight. And so, you know, definitely couldn't have picked a better podcast to join, be a part of, and just add some, you know, a little bit of my story and some of my experiences.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I receive that fully. And you, listen, you know, I wore all of this intentionally. You lucky I couldn't find my Chargers hat. Because I said, let me cut this camera on. And he's just surrounded by a Raider shit. And I'll be like, oh, wait a minute.
You got the black in the background too, so well, I mean,
that's because black and white is like the consistent color of my entire house. But like, but you know, San Diego Chargers through and through and through. So we'll be able to in our conversation, we'll be able to hear that story of how you ended up right working for the Raiders organization, because it got to be dope. Just the pathway of how that came to be for you. But first, we got to start with how you even get into this work. How did you fall into the field of social work? Or how'd you find it?
So I got introduced to social work at a young age. My mom is a social worker. You know, I got a chance to see her, you know, growing up. And I'll be honest, you know, I always wanted to play football, right? Since the time I was probably 4 years old, my mom bought me this football. And I don't know what it was about this ball, but I just felt like, okay, this is something that has to do with my life. But my mom was a social worker. And so, you know, growing up wanting to play football, my whole, you know, purpose in life was like, I'm going to retire my mom from this field, right? So for a lot of people, you know what I mean? Again, I love the field of social work, but again, I know how much social workers get paid because I was raised by one, right? So, you know, my mom was a single mom, raising six kids, you know, immigrant from Jamaica, moved to Brooklyn, New York in the 80s. And so, you know, she navigated some very interesting times. I would say her personal life, you know, things I didn't really understand until I got older. But, you know, my mom, she worked in whether it be juvenile courts. I was with her when she was picking up kids from the detention center, you know, and having them the awkward car rides, you know, having conversations with her about her caseload. I felt like, you know, in a sense, we always, you know, sat at the table and had these conversations. She'll tell me about a client. You know, I'd be like, well, how did he get into that situation? And she'd give me backstory. And I always was just like intrigued with the storytelling, you know, pieces of it. And so I remember like interning with my mom in high school, going to do home visits, stuff like that. And like I said, I still never thought that I would ever become a social worker. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, I got to thank my mom. She always said that she knew that I would, you know, be in this space and do this work. She said she saw from a young age, but that's a credit to her because she definitely grew me in this work.
You are the second person now. I had a conversation with somebody on a previous episode that shared how they were exposed to the field of social work early on in their life. Every other like Black or brown person that I have talked to, my story included, we had no idea about the actual field of social work, that it was like a place where you could find a profession and like do this type of work. literally fell into it like after undergrad or as a career shift or change, but you are the second Black person that I have had this conversation with, and you had like an imprint early on in life and a name for the work, like the field of social work.
Yeah, and I think for my mom, she didn't know essentially either. She didn't have a background. Her master's wasn't in social work, right? But she was in Brooklyn, New York during the crack epidemic, and I think for
She was doing
her,
the work.
right, her experience, she got into working in child welfare and she got a chance to see it. And I think for her it was like, she had done many things before. I think when she had got into the work, she kind of was like, I see myself in it. And I think for her it was just that connection to it. And so, we wound up moving to Florida. She tried to get away from it too. Try to teach and do stuff like that, but of course it calls you back. And yeah, she got back into it, working in more at a minority mental health with mothers, so like maternal mental health, working with under five, doing play therapy and stuff like that. And so, that was always kind of like her passion of just supporting mothers, supporting families, especially single moms. And I think, part of her experience was that, so yeah.
So you said you're one of six, and but primarily raised in Florida.
Yes.
Because I hear it. I hear it in the accent. The Florida's coming
Yeah.
out. The Florida coming out. So like one of six, primarily like raised in Florida, and you had a goal or a vision thinking that you was gonna be playing football professionally, but your mom was like, oh nah, he think he's gonna be doing that, but what he actually is gonna be doing is something way different than playing football. So when you think about just your journey throughout sports and then undergrad and then moving into the graduate space for your social work degree, walk us through that. Like, how do you go from having a vision of like, oh no, like I'm about to, me and this pigskin go together real bad, and now all of a sudden you open up DSMs talking to people about their feelings?
Yeah,
How'd
so how did that even? Yeah, listen, I asked myself that some days. I really be like, how did I
happen?
get here? Honestly, for me, it was like football was I would say like my passport. You know what I mean? It gave me opportunities to expand my, what I thought I could be and what I thought I would, be able to do in life. I mean, honestly, it was like, growing up, I didn't have a lot of men in my life in a sense that were doing things that were productive, just doing things in a sense that I aspired to do. And so it was like, okay, when I cut on the TV, I remember, I think that the it was a game I watched the University of Miami, and this is like, early 2000s when they were like one of the best teams in college football. And I just saw guys that look like me, you know what I mean? Guys that talk like me from the, guys that look like the guys in my neighborhood with gold teeth, with dreads. And I'm just like, man,
True
like,
Florida, true
right? Like, I'm like,
Florida.
hold on, these look like me. And I think to me, like, I just saw like the swagger that they played with, what they kind of brought to the field with them. It looked like, they look like kids from my neighborhood. And so, for me, it just visualizing, just seeing that, I like originally my goal was to play college football. I didn't have this idea of going to the NFL. I really saw college football and I was like, man, I just want to be on that stage. I want to play at that stage. And I got the opportunity to do that. I played high school, wasn't on a really good team. I won 5 games in 4 years, so wasn't highly recruited, right? And then I got an opportunity to go to an all-star game, and coach just happened to see me, saw me, said, hey, this kid looks like he can play. Talked to my coach. They were actually in the same fraternity, so they connected, right? And then that was the only offer that I received from the University of Louisiana. So for me, up until high school, my senior year, like I didn't have any offers, I didn't have no scholarships, I hadn't applied to any colleges. My plan wasn't to go to college, honestly. I still remember like the conversations I had with my guidance counselors, because I went to a very, I would say, academically rigor, high
High
school.
school,
Yeah, they had everybody taking AP classes, doing all this stuff,
I'm
and
right there with you.
right at the time, I didn't understand why these students were doing this. I'm like, why y'all studying in the hallway? Like, why y'all doing this? I didn't realize it, right? I didn't get it. And I remember my guidance counselor,
Graduating with a 5.3 GPA. How you get a
correct,
5.3?
valedictorian, salutatorian with 5.8. I'm like, how y'all? So yes, as I was getting my senior year, I had a 2.3 GPA, and I was like, I'm not going to college to go. I'm just not, unless I'm playing football. And so, I remember having those conversations. I remember everybody kind of just like, this kid is just a lost cause kind of thing. And then I got that offer. And for me, it was just like, one of those moments that was just like, for me and everything that I kind of wanted to do, it was like, okay, I can finally say that I'm on my way of doing that. And so get into college. Got a chance to start for 2 years. My junior and senior year was a defensive captain, and it just seemed like everything was kind of leading on that trajectory to go to the
To the
NFL.
NFL.
In that moment, I'm like, okay, this is really an opportunity in the sense where I'm able to maybe change, my family's trajectory, my legacy. All these different things were kind of like, in the forefront of my mind. And then get to my senior year. We kind of go on like a historic run for the school, the first bowl game in like modern school history. I'm a senior on that team, so all these things are happening. I'm just like, wow, like this thing is really about to,
To
go.
pop, yeah.
Right. And I get to my final college game. We're playing in a bowl game in New Orleans, where the Saints play. I think it's now the Caesar's Dome or something like that. And so we get to this game. Leading up to this game, at this point, getting called by agents. I'm getting, essentially like getting those feelers of like, hey, listen, if you have a good game, this may be, your opportunity. And I remember going into the game. I probably got to like pregame warmups. I went to like the middle of the field, and I had this moment. I heard a voice say, "Take it all in." And I'm just like, oh, okay, like this is about to happen, right? Like I'm like, oh, that's God right there, yeah. And 10 minutes later, I had a freak injury, dislocated my kneecap before the game starts, pregame warmups. And then I'm just like left with like, what just happened? And the only thing I could ask is just like, why, right? I knew it happened. I thought I was dreaming, but I knew it was like real. And I just couldn't ask myself, like, well, why did this happen? Like I was searching for like a meaning. And up to that point, I really wasn't going to, I had one more semester to graduate, and I wasn't going to go back. So I had packed up all my stuff. I had given away my stuff at the school. I cleared out my dorm room, gave away
Just
sneakers, all.
over it. You was just,
I was over it. Like I literally was like, listen, if I play well in this game, it's a wrap. I won't have to go back. I can always go back and get a degree. And in that moment when it happened, I remember going into the locker room and I heard a voice say, "Go back to school." And I was just like, what are you like, go back to school? And I heard it one more time and I was like at complete peace in that moment
With the
because I,
decision.
with the decision, right? Because I knew in that moment it was like I have been, trying to direct this thing. You know what I mean? Been trying to take ultimate control of this stuff. And I had to get sit down. It sat me down real quick and it was like humbling, right? To just realize that like you can enjoy it, but you won't be a part of it. You know what I mean? And so that was real humbling for me to kind of watch that game, won the game. It was, really cool to be a part of, still real connected with a lot of my teammates, some of my best friends. And that was like one of the best moments of my life. But, coming out of that game, I think reality kind of set in, was like, oh, what's going to happen next? And so I
You
wind
had
up.
a plan, right? To your point, you thought you had things it mapped out and
Listen.
things were lining up, and then all of a sudden,
It all came like literally like that. And so like I had a lot of different experiences when I went back for that final semester, and it was just like divine interventions, just kind of just being in the right place, meeting the right people, having experiences that just kind of revealed, a little bit more of who I was outside of football. And it was encouraging. And so wind up still graduating. And the week of my graduation, I went undrafted. I got a chance to do my pro day, and the only team that reached out to me at my pro day was the Raiders, right? So I go, I get healed up 3 months. I'm able to go out there and do my pro day. And the Raiders, they had a scout, and he pulled me to the side and he was like, "Man, I think you have an opportunity to, go out there and potentially make a team." And so in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I'm gonna get drafted now, right? So plant the seed of getting drafted. Draft comes and goes. I don't get drafted. I don't hear anything after the draft. And so I'm just like, okay, I guess I got graduation and I'll be good. And the week leading up to my graduation, I get a call from the Raiders. And they're like, "Hey, listen, we got, rookie mini camp. We could bring you out for a tryout. There'll be 80 guys trying out for 8 spots." So I'm like, "Oh, okay." And I was like, "Well, I have graduation this weekend." They're like, "Well, do you want to graduate or do you want to play in the NFL?" And so I wind up missing my graduation for that opportunity. So I never got a chance to walk across the stage for undergraduate, and so going to the Raiders, having that, essentially 3 day tryout. I think when I first got there, I really realized that like this was going to be very short lived, because
What made you realize that?
you start breaking down the numbers. I think, for a lot of a lot of student athletes in a sense, like you, I know I didn't think so far ahead that I started to play the numbers game, right? Because
Got you.
up until that moment, I just thought like, okay, if you're good, they'll find you, you know, you'll be able to play. And so they brought 80 tryout guys, meaning guys who weren't drafted, and they selected eight guys out of that. And those eight guys went to a group of 90 guys, which they got down to 53. So like when you, so when I got there, I was like, oh, I'm just a body pretty much here to help these guys get seen. And you know, I think for me at that moment, I didn't really care too much about like what was going to be on the other side of it. I just kind of really wanted to take in what was happening.
Right.
And I had dreamed about this, you know, I had dreamed about just being at that place. Got a chance to really, you know, just take in that moment. And then, you know, 3 days later it was over and I was on a plane back home. And I think that's when everything kind of set in motion. I was, you know, expecting a child. And so everything was kind of just accelerating. The
Yeah.
process was just
There's a lot of
accelerating.
stuff on the line.
Right. And
Yeah.
so in that moment, you know, I had to go in and find a job. And I remember in that moment, I was like, I don't know what I want to do. Maybe I'll go be a PE coach. And honestly, it was these were the options. I'm gonna go be a PE coach, or I'm gonna go, you know, do something in a sense that has to do with kids.
What'd you
And
study in undergrad?
so general studies.
Look, not that it even mattered because we all got them undergrad
Correct.
degrees and couldn't do nothing with them.
Correct. I would definitely say I was very much that football player that said I studied football, right? I mean, I
What,
honestly
everybody had that communications major or that I was in
I did
class with a
I took
couple of
some
them,
there's
bless
some
them.
classes on my transcript that I look at and I'm like, what are I took a
Yeah.
survival in the wilderness course. I took military
Yeah.
classes. I don't
Yeah.
know what exactly these credits are for. But one thing I did realize and I found out was like literally what they do for football players, especially those who don't have any academic pursuits, is that they will place you in any class to keep you eligible. And I didn't know that, right? And so like every time that I would go make my schedule, they'll put me in these classes. And I'm like, what are these
They
classes?
made it for you.
They made the classes for you, right? And then I would look at it and I'd be like, I don't want to take this class. And I would go and change my schedule.
Yeah.
But a lot of my teammates, they didn't do that. And it took them 5 to 6 years to graduate because they just had classes that didn't
They
speak
wasn't
to them.
getting the credits they needed to graduate.
They were literally there to keep them eligible to play. And so for me, I'm so glad I had that realization that like, you know what, I'm gonna pick my own classes. I'm gonna
Yeah.
study what I want to study. And for me, it was like, again, I studied criminal justice because one, I didn't want to go to jail. So I wanted to know the law. I wanted to know everything I could know about the law because at the end of the day, I'm like, listen, you need to know what you can and can't do. So I studied criminal justice. I did some education. I did some African American studies.
Yeah.
I pretty much did a bunch of different stuff that I was interested in, but it came out to a general studies degree. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you get, I can't even say when the Raiders just send you back home. We can't even say get cut, but like when the Raiders just send you back home, and now you're expecting a child, life is settling in, and you're trying to figure out what you're going to do. And it sounds like there's a period of time between when that is happening and then when you decide to apply and end up in grad school. How much time are we talking about in between?
So between getting cut and applying for grad school, that was so 2012, I got cut and I went back to grad school 2017. So
So
that's,
you live some life.
yeah, I had to live life. And that was honestly, that was some of the toughest, that transition period of
Yeah.
former athlete kind of figuring out. So that 3 to 5 year window for me was tough. And it was because of the loss of identity, I would say the first
Yeah.
part.
It's a mourning that happens. Like you literally, it's a legitimate loss. Like even when you were retelling the story, and it seems like you told the story a couple of times or maybe numerous times, I don't know, but retelling the story about your freak accident and your knee, I'm like, God damn, like that's a loss. It's a death of dreams. It's a death of like so many of aspirations and goals that somebody has been setting out for a number of years. All of that is just gone.
And
You know what
like
I mean?
to your point, like I didn't have the language in a sense to identify what it was,
Yeah.
like what was happening, right? In my own personal life, like it was a really traumatic experience in a
Yeah.
sense to just feel like, you know, the carpet got pulled under your feet, right? You get
Literally.
so close to like, you know, what you want to accomplish and then for it to just kind of happen like that. You know, it kind of left a lot of doubt in my mind of like really pursuing anything again. Like really, I was just really trying to play it safe coming out of that just because of the hurt, you know what I mean? The experience of having that, of just kind of like aspirations and loss. And so, yeah, I played it safe for that 5 year window between 2012, 2017. Honestly, I was just trying to do something that could kind of keep me just here,
There we
honestly.
go. There
You
we
know what I
go.
mean? And like, it was the work. It was my first job I got was an independent living specialist, right? So I was
Okay.
helping those students
Yeah.
transition out of foster care. And like, you know, for me, I didn't realize it at the time, but like, I was needing exactly what I was supposed to be supporting them with. Like, I was going through my own transition. And I didn't realize it at the time, but you know, for a lot of those youth that I work with, you know, that they spent their entire life in foster care. You know what I mean? And so them coming up on their 18th birthday was like this huge, you know,
Scary.
anxiety-filled
Yeah.
experience. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? And like, literally, you got kids in a group home, and like, you know, they got to pack that trash bag up and be out of there before their 18th birthday. And it's like, you know, having to go and support kids in those experiences, for me, it was like it made my, you know, internal experience a little bit lesser because I have perspective now of like real life. And so, you know, in a sense, it kind of revealed my privilege, you know, like I've had the opportunity to accomplish some things and do some things
Yeah.
regardless of how I saw it. You know, the kids that I was working with, they always reminded me, and I always, in a sense, didn't realize how much I needed that. But like them young people, man, they would tell me
It teaches so
like,
much.
no, like you did this, like you actually did this. You know what I mean? And I would minimize so much of my accomplishments to them. I'm like, oh, I only did this, or I only did that. And they would be like, no, you did
You
it.
did
Like,
big shit. Like, don't
right.
minimize that.
And so that, you know, for those that time being, I think, you know, I really got some experiences as far as like what I wanted to do, what I didn't want to do. So I went a transition from that work. I got laid off because the laws changed. I didn't realize that, you know, policy affects the work that we do. That was my
Woo.
first introduction, right?
Woo.
My first job, I was 22 years old. After a year, I got laid off because they had changed the policies in the state of Florida about extending foster care, right? So pretty much my role was obsolete, and they were leaving it to the foster parents to teach the independent living skills to these kids, right? So that
Wow.
was my first experience with policy. I'm like, oh, I got laid off. I thought that happens to people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, right?
Yeah.
And so I first tried to go away from the field, but I got called back into case management. Started doing child welfare reunification. So did that work for a year, and that's why I got introduced to moral injury. Now that I know what it actually is,
Wait,
I
but
was
to me,
burnout.
moral injury working in child welfare, man.
I thought it was burnout. I was calling it burnout for a long time, and then I got introduced to the term, and I was like, oh, that's what that was, you know. And so yeah, I did that. That chased me out of the field because I couldn't for the life of me. Like, I was explaining this to someone, and I was like, you know, I thought my job was the compassion, the empathy. I thought
Yeah.
that was my job, right? And I wasn't. Like, really, my job was essentially what their contract stated of compliance,
Yeah.
right? If you need to see those kids 95% of the time in a 30-day window, that's your job. Your notes need to be entered by this certain time, right? Your judicial review needs to be in.
Surveillance and productivity. That's all they really care about.
And when I realized that, I
Yeah.
was like, oh, right. And I realized also, the better you, as good as you are at your job, you're going to get more cases. So
Yes. Give
it taught me even more. I was like, you don't get paid more, right? You get more work, less
it
pay. And I'm like, I
to
can't,
him. He got
I, that does not make sense.
it.
So,
Yes.
I ran from that, got away from it. And, you know, for a moment, I was just searching, honestly. I was trying to find something in a sense to just make money, do something in a sense that was productive. I wound up being a substitute teacher for a little bit. I was working at the Boys and Girls Club doing some programming with teenagers. And then I was working overnights at a residential facility. So at one point, I had three jobs. I was really Jamaican, like
I said,
literally
not us having the
tapping into
same
my roots.
life. Yeah.
Listen, so like I said, in that 5-year window, I got a chance to explore a lot of different things that I really, like I said,
Yeah.
whether I wanted to be in those spaces, or whether I realized that, okay, this is more of a space for me. But then I think everything changed. I got hired by this community action team. And so it was a really good program in the sense they had put in place. And that's what really gave me the experience of seeing a social worker in more of a macro role.
Yeah.
I had a director, and she was, you know, really the overarching administrator to all of the program and the compliance and all that stuff. And, I just shared with her a little bit about what I wanted to do, and she said, "Listen, I want you in the meetings. I want you to sit next to me. I want you to kind of, just pick up on what you see me doing." And I just became more and more intrigued with that, and I was realizing that, like, okay, if I really go into direct service, I'm going to be, listen, I won't last. And I started to realize that there was some space for me on this side of it, and I was like, okay, you know what? I'm gonna go on this side. And that was what led me to essentially apply for school and go back to get my MSW.
So there's a 5-year period, and so how old are you when you apply for grad school and
So I
start?
was 27,
All
27
right,
when I
so
started.
you are 27, and just I'm trying to just like I'm comparing it to like my own experience in grad school. You're 27, you black, you're a man, and you're going to grad school for social work. And I'm just imagining who are you met by when you begin this program and you are surrounded by people in orientation and your first day of class, who's sitting to the right and the left of you, who's in front of you,
Listen,
who's behind
and when I say white women, was
you?
the entire orientation, I was like, oh, I'm in the and again, I worked in these spaces and I understood and I realize now why, the feeling was what it was. But for me, it was a unique experience because even when I applied, like I had to go through a unique process in applying because my academic background essentially, didn't align with their requirements, right? And so, like when I got this idea to go back to school, of course, it was like I graduated with a 2.3 GPA. I've been out of school for 5 years. Like, I mean, I'm like, okay, you're gonna have to really make a pitch here about, school accepting you back into their program. And so what wound up happening was I applied for a school that I didn't want to go to first. And I just wanted to test out, personal statement, all this stuff before I go in, because I wound up applying to my mom's alma mater, which is Barry University, right? So I watched my mom when I was in high school go back and get her MSW. And I was at the time, I want to say I was 14. She graduated when I was 16. And that
Go
was like,
off, Mom. Let's go. That's what's up.
listen, when I say
Woo.
I have
That's
never been
phenomenal.
more
That's hard work
proud,
right there.
listen, I've never been more proud to be her son than watching that. You know what I mean? Because again, she had just had twins and six kids in total, going back to go do that program. And I mean, when I say, we were watching the kids while she was at school. We was helping support her, and like we were all involved with her getting this degree. So it was like honestly, like all of us got it. And I think all of us, as her kids, it really like set the standard for us of like of just academia. Like, my mom now, came to this country and obtained 2 degrees, and it's like,
That's
okay, bare
beautiful.
minimum that you can do is get one, right? And so yeah, seeing my mom do that, I was like, I know I want to go to Barry. I want to go to this school that she went to. I just feel like there's something there for me. And so I applied. Applied to Barry. And I remember I went to like their like pre-orientation kind of thing that you go in. And I was like explaining my circumstance. I was like, listen, this is where I'm at. And they were like, you better write a damn good personal statement, right?
At least they told you
You know what I
the
mean? Like they told me straight up, write a good personal statement.
truth.
And I was like, okay. And so I challenged myself on that. And I put in there, just kind of shared my story up until then. And I remember just putting like my big aspiration. I was just like, I think I opened it in the first sentence. And I was like, I want to be a rock star in therapy, right? And in my mind, it wasn't like, I want to be this person. I don't want to be Brené Brown. Like, that's not what I was
Ain't
saying.
nobody trying to be her.
Correct. I want to be recognized for what I have to bring to this space, right? And that was my charge, in a sense, to myself. That's what I was telling myself. I was like convincing myself of this, like this is your calling. And so when I applied, they accepted me, but they put me on probation. I applied for the
Off the
full
jump, like right from the
listen.
beginning.
I had to go in for an interview. I went in for my interview, and I was meeting with the assistant dean. And I had a proposal at the time of my nonprofit organization. So at the time, I was like building this nonprofit, thinking of this
Is that the
idea.
inspired youth? I mean,
And so as I was like having this idea, I was like, let me go back to school and I'm going to use this social work program to build this out, right? And
smart,
so that was like my thinking was like, this is business school for a social entrepreneur,
smart.
right? And so I go into the program and I present this to her at my hearing, pretty much for, getting into the program. And she looks at it, she looked over it, and she was like, you know what? Like, yeah, I believe you. And like, you know, they let me in the program. I was under like probationary period. And I remember my first day of the program. I went in there and I want to say it was three males in there. I was the only black male when I started into my cohort. But I remember sitting down, they were going through like all of the, you know, all the stuff that they tell you, how you graduate with honors, 3.8 GPA, like, you know, if you want to graduate with these cores. And I remember just writing all this stuff down because I was like, you know what? They done brought me here on probation, but when I leave here, I'm getting these things, right? Like
I
I
know that's right.
literally challenged myself to that. So, but yeah, I mean, getting into Berry, you know, getting there and you know, just having, I felt like at that time, just a true clarity on what I wanted to do. That's what kind of led me there, and it all kind of fell in place once I got there.
Yeah, it just sounds like your approach to grad school, like even you mentioning, like thinking about your social work degree as just a social entrepreneur program, right? Like, how do I think about doing the good work, but then operating a functional business? Because that's all a nonprofit is. It's a business at the end of the day. Supposed to be working towards social good, but we know they all don't do that. And so for you, for you to even approach the program that way, so many people don't come into work, coming to school that way. I know I didn't. I went to grad school because I needed something to do. When I had graduated, I took time off. I worked. They told me about social work. I applied to social work programs. I went not knowing what social work was or is, what the field is, and to like what you said earlier, how many white ladies are just there? Just be surrounded by it, and even inside of your curriculum, the things they're trying to teach you and get you to understand is through their lens. And so for you said there's about three males in your program, right? You're the only black one. It's a whole bunch of, female identified folks in schools of social work, but then even in the actual field, like once we get out and we're working and we're running organizations and doing all this great work, it's still a whole bunch of ladies. Right. No matter what them colors are, it's just a whole bunch of ladies in the field of social work. And men truly are like, where you come from? Right. Like, how you get over here? Like, how did you learn about this? And
Listen.
so when you think about that, and I believe the visibility of Black social workers and brown ones are just necessary in general, but definitely the visibility of like Black and brown men that get into this female-dominated industry. How has that been for you?
I would say honestly, when I first got into it, and you know, I knew it when I started working, right? Because all of my supervisors were women.
Yeah.
Like I've been trained in this field through women, right? Through the lens of women, through, and
Yeah.
I've had some great
And your
bosses,
mama, right? Your first
and through my
teacher.
mom, right? So yeah, like there was always a connection to, you know, for myself and to the work, but also in a sense of having, I always felt like I also had a strong connection of you know, being able to be supported by women because I was raised by a single mom. And so I
Yeah.
always felt like, you know, the encouragement that you get from a woman that really wants to help you and support you, it looked completely different than, you know, being
Absolutely.
supported by a man. So for me, I always, in a sense, had that in the field. And then when I got into, you know, my grad program, I think that's when I started to seek like men, especially men of color
Yeah.
in the field, because I was just like, well, what are they doing? And I'll never forget, I think the it was the day before. So I had the conversation, I had the interview with the assistant dean to get into the program. And the next day I was going on this I was chaperoning with the Urban League.
Okay.
And they were going to this conference. It was the Preventing Crime in the Black Community conference that
Okay.
they had, right? And so I go to this conference and I'm chaperoning, working with these kids, and I'm just like, okay, you know what? I'm gonna go to this conference and something's gonna happen here. I just feel like I just felt it, right? And I go into a presentation, and there was this black social worker. His name is Pernell Bush, lives in Orlando. And like that was my introduction. He's a former military vet. I wanna say he is Marine. And so he did a presentation on entrepreneurship from a social worker's lens, right?
Boy,
So
okay.
and like I'm sitting through his presentation, I'm with the kids that I'm chaperoning, and I'm just sitting and I'm like, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I want to
Like
do.
you saw yourself, like
I saw
literally saw
myself, like,
yourself. Yeah.
literally saw myself up there. And I wrote down in my notes, I was like, I'm going to be here at this conference next year, right? Fast forward a year later, I was able to present at that same conference, right? With my organization being up there and talking about the work that we had done. in a year. But like we're literally seeing him up there and literally seeing like him presenting and him just being a social worker in the space and having something to offer,
Yeah.
I was like, okay, now it's real.
I
And
love
I remember
that.
going up to him after the presentation, introduced myself. I handed him a proposal of what I wanted to work on. And I was just like, man, listen, I'm just glad I met you. You know, we still in a sense stay in contact, but like just in the sense of that, you don't realize how much you like, you know, put that in my back because I hadn't even started the program yet, right? And just seeing this brother, like the day I got accepted into my program, I was like, okay, cool.
I could do it.
Now I can do this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I just was able to get more and more, like whether it be LinkedIn or just kind of finding, you know, social workers out there. And I would just kind of, you know, look at the work that they were doing, you know, the way in which they did it. And I always kind of just wanted to bring my own, you know, niche. I knew I was working in my community. I
Yeah.
wanted to be in my community. That was in West Palm. I grew up there and I was just like, you know
Oh, West
what?
Palm Beach. Oh, y'all be having some situations. Oh,
For
I
sure.
know about West Palm Beach because of the Gun Violence Prevention Network that I'm a part of. And I was like, oh. They
They be going, what's the big
be at Cities United. Yeah, we
yes.
went through the Roadmap Academy together. I was like, oh, y'all got them bang bangs in West Palm
They
Beach.
got some issues
Yes.
down there. So yeah, growing up in that community and like really in a sense, like being from there, going off, coming back, I always felt like, you know what, I have the influence in a sense to be able to connect to
Yeah.
young people. And so that's what I wanted to do. And so yeah, going to school and going into the program, it was very much like, all right, man, we're gonna see how we do with this thing. And my first semester was kind of just, you know, that encouragement that I needed. Got a chance to meet some really cool, you know, lifelong friends in my cohort. But like, really, I think when I was speaking, I think the one thing that stood out was like, I was so convicted on what I wanted to do. I
Clear.
think I was
It
like,
sounds like you've been clear about what you want to
yeah.
do.
And
Yeah.
for me, I thought everybody was at that same place. That's why they was at grad school. And I was just like, you know, I was talking about my ambitions, what I wanted to do. And you know, I'm in class, people like, well, I just figured if I do this, then you know, then I could do this, or I
Yeah.
may be able to be a supervisor. And I was just like, okay, you know, and I understood that, like, you know, because that wasn't the, I remember when I first got into the field, someone said, go back to school, get your MSW. And I was like, I don't want to be a social worker. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't see anyone doing something with the degree that I wanted to
It's
do.
one of the best degrees you can get if you don't know what you want to
Right. And so
do.
when I got to my core, I realized that there were
Yes.
people that were literally just like, hey, listen, I don't want to jump into the field at no entry level or at this pay. I want to go and do the accelerated program, do advanced standing and you know, bump my little pay up. So, you know, I realized many people were coming into the field with that approach to it. But in my mind, I was just like, if I'm gonna do this, I have to, you know, think about it from the highest level. Like I wanna be an exec, I wanna be able to,
I
you know,
love that.
really oversee, like, and every time I told my professors that, they like literally believed me. And like
Yeah.
that was the most encouraging thing that I felt like I got was that they believed me when I said these things. And when I would talk in class, and you know, you may have classmates that I'd be like, ah, there you go again. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? But
You know how that
and
go.
my professors, they believed me. And I felt like I had never had that type of like academic support of a
That is
degree.
something special, I think, in grad school, right? Because, like, grad school, when you go to grad school, it really is your choice. I think a lot of us in our generation, we got pushed into undergrad because you telling your story a little earlier, like, you told them people you didn't want to go to school, right? I think a lot of us tried to tell them people back then, we don't want to go to school, but it's a whole generation of us that got pushed into undergrad. And by the time you get to grad school, it really is a choice. And it feels like the professors know that. And start to respect you as an adult, somebody who is invested in their academics and, you know, trying to figure out what their journey is, and they want to pour into you in a different way that I know I never experienced in undergrad.
Absolutely.
I never experienced that in undergrad. And so for you know, you go through through undergrad, you go through grad school, you get your MSW. How do we accelerate? How you get from your MSW program to the NFL? Because people need to
Goodness.
understand.
So I like during this time, and
With
I
an
remember
office, by the way, let me say,
a little
working with the
curious place
NFL
here,
with the office.
a little humble spot, you know, a little space, a
Yeah.
little nook. I mean, honestly, like I couldn't credit anybody but God. You know, I did my part, and
Yeah.
I truly feel like, when you do your part, and again, faith without works is dead. I just truly felt like, if I showed up and I did what I was supposed to do, there'll be place for me. Now, I never foresaw that being in the NFL, I'll be honest. So I always thought that these things were gonna have to be things that I created. So I went from, founding this nonprofit, going through grad school with this nonprofit, and realizing all of the pain that comes with trying to do this work and
Yeah.
trying to do it under a nonprofit. I
Yeah.
didn't realize like how many different barriers and just
And how
I
broke you
mean,
would be. I'll
oh
say it
my
for you.
goodness.
I'll say it out
Yes,
loud.
thank you.
Broke.
Yeah, broke. Do it or broke.
Yes.
Right. And just, I mean, I don't know. There was a different level of fearlessness that came with that, right? Because that just, where else you gonna go? Like, there's, you know what I mean? It wasn't like I was working 40 hours. A lot of my classmates were, but for me, I was fully invested in what I was doing. And so, when I started to see the results of like certain initiatives and things that I was doing, I was like, okay, you know what? There's some traction here. But when I founded that organization, what really helped me was it gave me access to spaces that I didn't have, that I wouldn't be invited to otherwise. Right? And so I'm being asked to be a part of steering committees. I'm being asked to be a board member. I'm being asked to do these things because people just saw that, okay, you know what? This brother has to be passionate. He started his own organization, right? And that, in a sense, helped them to champion me for opportunities. And so when I got into these spaces, I realized that I was like, listen, oh, I'm a thought leader. I have original thoughts. Like, I have concepts and ideas that, like, people are literally out here paying people for, right? And so that was encouraging, right? Kind of having that feedback, kind of having that experience. And then, so as I'm getting to the end of my, grad school career, I'm like, you know what? I want to get back into sports. Like, it was something that just was like, you know what? I feel like, once you kind of have this degree in place, you'll be able to have something to offer to the sports space, right? And so originally, I didn't think that there was something that existed. So I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna start a consulting business, right? I heard Nipsey Hussle on
Well,
this
you better
podcast.
quote Nip.
Listen, listen, if it wasn't for Nip, man, I wouldn't be here, man. Like, literally along the journey I had, I would say him as my mentor, you know what I mean? Because he would just say things about like his process that I truly like, just it resonated, you know what I mean? And he said, like, if you have an idea, put it in an LLC and then figure it out as you go.
There you
I was like, all right, I want to support athletes. I want to support it from a mental health lens. I'm gonna start a business. So I started this consulting business called Inspire You. And I was like, you know what? We're gonna start this business, and we're gonna see where we go from here. I had put in a proposal at this conference, the Black Student Athlete Summit. And they have this annual conference. I believe now it's at
Is it for
USC.
college students or
Yeah,
all
yeah.
levels?
So it's really, based in academia. So you have kind of like your student athletes, you have the support staff that supports the student athletes, that they go to this conference, and they have a bunch of breakouts, workshops, and different things like that. And then also, the presenters, and essentially are more attached to university. So it's more academia kind
So
of
now they're
based,
like
right?
community folk coming in and got you.
And so
Like
the
more
fact that they have,
academics talking to students?
correct.
Oh, that's trash. What?
Right. So because I had just graduated from Barry, I could still use Barry University,
Yes. So
right?
here.
But I also went under my consulting business, right?
Smart.
And so I did a poster presentation. I submitted this presentation that I wanted to do. And I wanted to like highlight my experience with transitioning out of football. But I wanted to highlight also that I wasn't alone in that experience. So I did this like data collection, did 50 athletes of color, for them to essentially, do a PHQ-9 that I kind of curated to be
Nice.
in line with like post-transition.
Yeah.
And so I did this, put this screening out, sent it out, and 50 athletes, submitted it, and they kind of highlighted, what their experiences were after they transitioned from sports. And so I called it PTSD, post-transition sports depression.
Okay.
And went in there, and I just wanted to talk to student athletes about their experiences after sports. And so I present this poster presentation. I had data that aligned with, a study that was done with white athletes and their transition, and to show like the correlation between race and, all this stuff. And so,
Gotta be smart.
listen,
Listen.
I say, when I was coming out of that academic space, listen, you could tell me I was Professor Ogilvy, man. I thought I was,
Be smart.
listen, I was in it. I was immersed in it.
Yes.
I did a I was a graduate assistant, so the research part I kind of was able to get through those experiences of being a graduate research assistant. And so yeah, I was like, let me just put all this together and let's see what happens. And so I go to this conference, I present this presentation, and on the last day of the conference, I'm leaving the conference, or like leaving to go to like the main auditorium or whatever, but I'm in the wrong place. And I run into somebody at the conference, and I see her, and she's like, "Hey, you're in the wrong place." You know, they're across campus, and this was at the University of Austin, Texas, and so their campus is huge. So we walk in, and in a 15-10 minute conversation, you know, I highlight, you know, I played 3 days for the Raiders, I just
Pitch
graduated my degree
yourself.
in social work, right?
Yes.
Just small spiel about me, right? And didn't realize how much that conversation would lead me here, right? So literally after that conversation, exchanged information and was like, "Hey, let's stay in touch." I go about my way. I go back home to Florida. And after that was probably January. This is 2020. So I graduated December 2019. This is January 2020. So in my mind, I'm like, "Okay, all this stuff is about to really take off now, right? This is the year, 2020,
Thinking
right?"
your business stuff, just your
Yeah, I'm
consultant.
thinking everything is about to take off, but like, the best thing I ever did, and I'd say probably in my life, was graduate early. I had one more semester left. And so my final semester, I went full time because I wanted to graduate before 2020. I don't know what it was that was pushing me.
Something told you.
I brought one of my cohort members with me, one of my good friends. I said, "Listen, we going full time. We'll carpool, we'll do whatever we got to do." And so we went full time. We wound up graduating in 2019. My rest of my cohort, they got, you know,
Got
hit with
hit by
COVID,
the penny.
right? Internships, everything in the sense, ceased, like all kind of stuff. So I was like, "Man, listen, when I say, ooh, I'm so glad I did this." So January comes, I leave the conference and I go back home on my birthday. Capricorn season obviously is right
Shout
around
out,
the corner,
shout out.
right? So for my birthday, I'd already booked a skydiving experience on Groupon.
Skydiving.
Yeah, skydiving.
That's very unearth-like sign of you. What?
So at this point, right, it's my 30th birthday. I'm like, "You know what? You got to do something extreme. Like you got to do something that, you know, out of your wheelhouse." And so I was like, "I'm gonna jump out of the plane." And so yeah, I go to jump out this plane, and I would just tell anybody that's ever gonna do it, go first. You know what I mean? Don't.
Don't wait, don't watch other
Yeah,
people.
no. I was second, and like literally, I watched this person disappear in a cloud. Like they just, I was like, "Oh my!" And then they telling me, "Scooch up, go ahead, scooch up." And I'm like,
Won't go no more.
so I go and I jump out the plane. We you know, get it all the way down, and we, you know, and I'm just like, honestly, I've never felt more alive in my life. It's a weird, very weird feeling, right? Like you understand the concept of death, but you understand the concept of life. It's like surreal. So I'm literally floating down. You know, they pull the parachute and everything. And as soon as I land, I left my phone in the car. So I was like, "Okay, let me go get my phone." And as soon as I open my phone, I get a message, and it's literally the girl that I had met at this conference, and she had sent me the job description for the Raiders, right? Like literally after landing, and I'm like, the first thing I see, the first message I see was that, and I'm like, "Nah, that's nah." Now, opened it up again just to make sure my eyes not playing tricks on me. And I'm like, and the description was the Raiders were looking for a director of alumni, and this player was going to be a social worker to support former players. I'm like, "Oh."
She went and made that.
Listen, I was like, "Okay."
I love it.
And I remember going home that afternoon, and I remember having a conversation with my mom, and I was like, "You know, I love what I'm doing right now, but I think I want to do this for like a year. I just want to see if it's mine." Like I was so, in my mind, I was just like, I just want to see if it's for me. You know what I mean? It wasn't even about the, it wasn't, honestly, I hadn't even thought so far about the role and all that stuff, moving, relocating. I just wanted a chance to interview, to share my story and just be like, "Okay, you
Just
know what?
try.
I just want to be in consideration," right? So that night I canceled my plans of going out and everything. You know, updated my resume, updated my cover letter, submitted it, and I just waited. And I was like, "Okay, we'll see what happens." So I got, you know, connected, got an interview, and this was February. Got an interview in February, had a second interview in March, and then COVID hits. So like, as I'm literally on the interview, with my then boss, she was telling me like, "Hey, we just got sent home today. You know, this thing that's happening right now across the world, we don't know what's
Yeah.
going to happen. So we'll contact you when we figure out what's going to happen." And so that was March. And so at the time, I was just like, "Okay, is this real? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't have the experiences of like getting my hopes
The
up,
ups and the
thinking you don't
downs.
have, you know what I mean, with the
Yep, the
NFL
ups and the
again." So I was
downs.
like, I was really trying to protect myself. I'm not gonna lie, I was really trying to protect myself from
Yeah.
like not getting my hopes too
Getting
high,
hurt.
right? And so, you know, not thinking that the world was shut down, you know what I mean, in a sense, with all this in a sense happening, having this opportunity in a sense in my sights, and then the world just like changes like overnight,
Yeah,
like, you know, COVID hit.
literally.
And so that waiting period for me was like, when I say anxiety, man, I just like, I couldn't like just process the idea of like, when is the world going to come back to like, you know,
Something,
I'm waiting on something.
semblance
Like,
of
right.
normalcy,
Like,
stability. Give me something.
give me something. I'll take the
Yeah.
stimulus. I'll take the stimulus check. But can we get to,
I'll
you
take
know,
another one, by the way. Tell them people
yeah,
run
we'll,
us another check.
yeah, we could yeah, put that position for that one too. But yeah, like so that waiting period for me was like it was tough, but one of the things that I'm proudest most about my most probably the thing I'm proudest of the most in the sense of in the field. So that organization I started, the goal was really to provide free therapy. That was like when I
Gotcha.
started out in the field, I was like, I just
But to
want to
athletes, like specifically to athletes, or
so
just
this was my nonprofit. So before I even
oh,
got
what
to the
inspired
football
youth?
part,
Okay.
yeah, what inspired you
Yeah,
is
yeah.
like as I was like in that waiting period, I was like, you know what? I had made some really good relationships up until
Yeah.
that point. And so was able to do a unique partnership with Urban League.
Okay.
They had like this this grant that they had received in a sense to provide services for families, but we were able to kind of change a little bit of it to support families from impacted by COVID.
There we go.
So
Yeah.
I was able in a sense to provide, you know, therapy for families during that time, in a sense, free of charge for them, and Urban League essentially paid me. So, like to me, I was like, "Oh wow, like this is what I wanted to do." So, like when I started doing that, I'm not gonna lie, I was
Forgot
like,
about that.
"I'm like NFL. I'm like,
Forgot
hey, listen, this is what I've been
about that
trying to
other
do
thing.
for 3 years, you know." So, I put my mind on just, you know, doing that, and I, you know, for me, it really helped me with my anxiety because I feel like, you know, sometimes when you are looking for something, you know, if you serve others, that stuff will kind of, you know, clear itself out, right? And
Yeah.
so if I focus on myself the whole time, then I'll probably drive myself crazy.
Yeah.
But because I was able to do, you know, that part, and these were like my first clients of my own, it was just like, oh man, this is really cool. So all that happens, and then 3 months or so goes by, and then the Raiders call back, right? They touch base, and I'm like, okay, is this real? Go through a series of other interviews. I probably did like 15 interviews in total. Yeah, it was extensive. And so up until that time, I didn't really realize like what all went into this process, right? So what I learned was I was the only external candidate,
Oh,
right?
they're oh internal. Okay. Okay.
So they had
Okay.
essentially hired a firm, a search firm, right?
Yeah.
Essentially to find,
Yeah.
you know, the ideal candidate. And so I was the only person that submitted my application to HR. I didn't even have a link or nothing to, you know, upload your stuff. I just literally sent email to a contact name,
OG
you know,
way.
OG, right? Cover letter, resume,
Yeah, here you go.
you
Attach
know,
email.
here you
Send.
go, upload it to
Yes.
whatever. And so in that process, I'm like, okay, the job is coming back around. This may be something, you know, the world's starting to kind of figure itself out. And I get down to the final two interviews. So it's me and another person. And at the time, I created in my mind that this other person didn't exist, right? I was just telling myself, like, hey, listen, they're just telling you that to keep you sharp. That's it.
There we go. I like that reframe. I like that reframe.
Right. So I'm like, nah, that's what it is. They just try to trick you, throw you off your game. So they invited me to interview in person. So I flew out to Vegas. I wasn't here, probably not even 24 hours. Like, I literally flew in, interviewed, and then they flew me back out. But during that time, I had like one of those moments. I felt like it was Pursuit of Happiness, one of those moments when he's sitting down across from, you know, the guy and they're having that conversation. And so at the time, the former president of the organization, he was interviewing me. And I told you the story about the scout that had scouted me at the Raiders. So I had kept his card in my wallet for like 8 years,
Wow.
right? And For me personally, it was just like a reminder to
Yeah.
myself. Anytime that I was kind of in that space of like, bro, you have accomplished things. Like,
You
don't
did
ever,
that.
you
Don't
know
you
what I'm saying?
ever.
Don't ever tell yourself, you know what I mean? And so I kept this card in my wallet also because I wanted to prove the kids too, because kids, they hurtful. They will tell you some
Like,
things.
oh, you lying. You better tell them, Google me.
Listen, them kids will hurt your feelings. You talking about 3 days with the Raiders. Oh, them kids are brutal. So I'll keep that card and be like, yeah, so-and-so, right? And so when I pulled that card out and I showed it to the president, I was like, listen, like, I've kept this card in my wallet for 8 years. And I don't know why. I just felt like I always, in a sense, just wanted to remind myself. And so he's like, nodding his head. He takes out his card. He was like, add this card to your wallet.
No, that's right.
Right. And I'm just like, man, I think I got the job.
You got that job.
So I flew back that day. And the next day I get the call. I'm at my mom's house. And it was like draft day, you know, it was just like,
Yeah.
you know, 8 years later, all of these different experiences, all these
Yeah.
emotions I went into, and I'm just like crying, boo, crying. My mom's there, she in there, you know, shouting
Love
praises,
it.
you know. And yeah, it was just like a moment. And I was just so glad that, like, you know, time had kind of froze in a sense to be there with my mom to kind of experience it. But yeah, that was just like one of those moments in time. And so yeah, that's kind of how it all.
Look, throughout your story, I hear this sense of like discipline that you have to listen, right? Like you tell all these different kind of spurts in your story and these moments of like things got quiet and you heard like a, you know, go back to school or take it all in. Like, you know what I mean? Like you just like listen to these things and not ignore them. But then beyond just listening, taking in the information and then being curious enough to know you ain't got all the answers, but at the same time, there's this level of faith that you're not gonna fail. You know what I mean? Like it's gonna work itself out. You're gonna figure it out. I don't have to have everything planned out and I don't have to have the answers, but I do need to have some level of faith and discipline to listen to when the messages
Absolutely.
come. You know what I mean? And so many of
Absolutely.
us do not do that because we get so kind of tunnel vision. Oh, this is the way that I want things to go. This is what I would like to do. This is how I see my life when all of that is out of our control. We can't control none of that. And you had so many life lessons that kind of taught you in big ways and small ways that you can't control nothing
Right.
but
And
yourself.
if you want disappointment, try to control what's going on right
You can't
now.
do it. It's not
Yeah.
possible. And so now you're working for the Raiders organization. And what is your official title? Do you have one of them LinkedIn titles? Because y'all
You
be having them long
know,
titles. What's your official title?
me get my hands, you know,
Yes, tell me
situated for the
what's the
title.
title?
So now I serve as Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion
Here we go.
with the Raiders. So I served originally in my first role, Director of Alumni Benefits and Resources, for about 2.5 years. So, you know, that was really a case management role, supporting former players that had played for the Raiders organization. We had over 960 former players, in a sense, that we had contact with, whether they're spouses, you know, whether they're living or not. And we essentially just provided them support. I would compare it similar to like VA, right? The VA services, in the
That's what
sense
it
of,
sounds like.
yeah, connecting them to the resources that they
Yeah.
have gained through the NFL, through their retirement, connecting them with resources, you know, everything from disability, workers' comp, dental, you know, you name it, you know, helping guys or families in a sense, you know, from respite to everything. And so, like when I got here and I got a chance to do that role, that was like ultimately like this fulfillment of like,
Yeah,
man,
that's dope.
all these experiences that I've, you know, whether I collected from my own teammates, my own personal life, I have a place now where I can live, right? And so I loved it, loved every minute of it. And then opportunity came to do something different, something I never thought I would be doing. And that was the DEI role. And so, yeah, just realizing the opportunity in it. I think, you know, for myself, that role that I was in at the time, was kind of one-on-one at the NFL level.
Yeah.
No other team essentially had put in place like
Yeah,
a
I've
social
never heard of that
worker
before.
list, right? And so I was like, I have this role, I've had that role, I've done this work, I've built kind of infrastructure for this work to kind of exist. And I wanted to like a new challenge, I'll be honest. And the DEI role opened up. And at first I wasn't gonna apply for it. And I was like, you know what? Instead of applying for it, prepare for it. That's
There
kind
you
of
go.
what my challenge to myself. Before I claim something, I want to I want to claim my preparation, right? And so I went and did like a diversity certification in the workplace at USF, and just wanted to get some framework and stuff in case the opportunity ever presented itself, right? So, opportunity kind of came about. The organization actually came to me and was asking me about my interest in the role, and I was like, oh, okay. And at the time, what really pushed me into, wanting to be in this role was when we hired our president, Sandra Douglas Morgan,
Yeah.
first Black
Black
female
lady. I'll give
president.
y'all props. Y'all front office. I'm very y'all got it, you know. I respect
We
it. I
try to
respect
do
it.
it. We do what we can,
Yeah, I respect it.
credit to our ownership, for sure, right? Just the leadership that we have and the way in which they've always kind of seen, the way they wanted this organization to be positioned is always, in a sense, diversity kind of sits
Yeah.
at the top of
I don't
that.
think they have no choice. All them years they spent in Oakland, when you think about the
Right.
roots and the history and the
Yeah.
fabric and the energy of Oakland, you don't
Very
stay
true.
there for decade after decade after decade without like taking on, absorbing some of that into your company.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Especially
Yeah.
during those times, right?
Especially.
Think about the Black Panthers, 60s.
Especially.
That's when Al Davis essentially was, coming to ascension in the Raiders. So I feel like the two kind of work, synonymous in a sense with how one inspired and
Yeah.
transitioned to, in a sense, position them. So yeah, getting into this role was really, for me, a unique opportunity. I felt like, if you're going to do DEI work in the NFL, probably want to do it with the Raiders. So I was like, well, that kind of, in a sense, sold me. But also, in
Yeah.
a sense, to have a leader, of her caliber. Like I said, I always, in a sense, have always, had female leaders, strong female leaders,
Yeah.
and seeing, her coming into this role, taking over the organization, and just having putting her footprint on it, I was like, I want to be in proximity to her greatness, right? And so, this DEI role really gave me that opportunity. And so, yeah, I've been in this role now for about a year, learning, absorbing, doing the work.
Yeah, that listen, this is a phenomenal story, and it's almost it feels like one of those like one in a million type situations, but it's also seems like a situation that I imagine many people maybe like dream about. How do I do that? How do I kind of end up where you are? And then to that, what I would encourage people to do is like don't compare yourself to anybody. You know, your journey and your path is your journey and your path.
Yes.
And you may not never end up right working for an NFL team or a professional sports organization. It doesn't mean that you weren't qualified or capable. It just wasn't your journey or path. And then when you
Absolutely.
even go back to the story you told about when they flew you out originally for to try out for the team, it was a numbers game.
Yeah.
All of this is a numbers game at the end of the day. Positions like the one you're sitting in, slim. There are not a
Yes.
lot of them,
Correct.
right? But it's almost going back to what I shared earlier, you just being really disciplined and clear, not knowing where you were going to end up, but you ended up there. And that, like, I resonate with that because I share all the time my intention to retire from the field of social work before by 2030. And people ask me what I'm going to do. I'm like, I have no idea. And I'm cool with not knowing.
Right.
You know
Right.
what I mean? Like, I'm
I'm in the
going to
same
figure it out.
bubble.
It's going to work itself out and I'm going to be fine. Like, who
Absolutely.
knows where you might end up? And so I'm sharing that in the hopes of encouraging people to release like these desires and all these expectations where you think you need to land. Because you never know. Like, once you surrender to a process, you will know a level of peace you have never met before.
I
Like,
like that.
just
Surrender to
surrender
the
to the
process.
process and
Ooh.
like it'll things will
Yeah.
work itself out. But as long as we're kind of fighting and trying to direct and control something we can't direct and control, you're gonna miss so many different opportunities for yourself. And so, like,
Yes.
shout out to you for not just leaning into that, but believing that you were going to be okay regardless. Like, I just want to be able to lift that part of your story out. And so, you have quite the job, right? But this is not the only responsibility you have in the world. Like you mentioned, I think when you were in that transition from undergrad to working for them 5 years, you had a child, right? And then, if I'm not mistaken, you got another baby.
Yeah,
You got
tell
two
me what's going
babies,
on. Hey,
right?
I was
You
starting.
got two babies, right? So
Uh-huh.
you somebody's son, daddy, partner, maybe an uncle, a nephew, all these different roles,
All of those
right?
things,
How are
yes.
you balancing all of that stuff?
I would say it's new again, I would say, and it's new in a different way, in a way in which I'm present for, right?
Mm.
Because my first son, Samson, and his story, I feel honestly it deserves its own platform.
It
I
does.
I'm not here without my son, Samson. So Samson was born 2012, like 4 months after I got cut. He was later diagnosed with autism, later diagnosed with a rare genetic disorder that DYRK1A syndrome, 1 out of 17 million people are diagnosed with this, right? So again, I have a story about odds. And again, you can imagine that what are those odds that essentially, you have a child with a rare genetic disorder. And so he has been honestly my perspective on life. Like he's given me a lot of different opportunities in a sense to reframe life. You know what I mean? Because I always, in a sense, again, we complain from a privileged space. Sometimes I do, you know what I mean? Able body, cis, black man, all these different things in a sense that I could sit here and say. But, for him, in a sense of being a parent of a child with a disability, there's a different level of humbleness that comes with that, right? Because for me, honestly, I stayed in this field because of him. I needed to know what existed. I needed to know resources. I needed to be able to speak the language. I needed to make sure that when, push came to shove, when it came to resources, benefits, anything in that world, that I had an understanding, you know what I'm saying? One, to help and serve him. And then also as a almost from a karma standpoint, that I felt like, you know what, I rely on so many people in a sense to serve him, that what am I doing in a sense of service?
Serving others.
Right. And it was like somebody's kid is relying on the service of me the same way I'm relying on the service of somebody to service my child. Right. So that honestly was like one of the real reasons why I stayed in this field of work. When it got overwhelming, when it got a lot, was just kind of that reassurance that I'm close to where I need to be. And so, yeah, so when Samson was born, I started growing my hair. I was bunned up right now, but I'm 11 years in.
Look,
You know,
I think I might be pushing 10 months. We'll see how
you go
long
through
this
the
lasts.
stages. I started out, started the short
10
journey,
months,
and we've seen it evolve. But yeah, I would say my first experience with fatherhood was I wasn't really present for it because I was so fixated on, I was hurt, one, from not being able to accomplish the things that I wanted to accomplish for him, right? It was like knowing that he was coming and having this tryout and thinking, okay, you know what? If this thing goes right, this kid's
Our
gonna have a
life
whole,
changes.
right? His life is gonna be different. But also, I'm so thankful of coming out of that like my life was different and it did change because of having him. And yeah, I just had a lot of experiences as a father that I felt like at the time I wasn't present for. Like I look back on it now and I'm like,
Also,
you know
how
what
old
I'm
are
saying?
you at the time? You were
I was
young.
20, 22. Yes.
You was,
So
I mean, by, using biology and the law, you still classified as a youth by the
as a
federal
young
government at
adult,
22. You
yes.
know what I mean?
Right. So, I think the experiences coming from that, but also in a sense was like, having a child that is getting diagnosed, you always in a sense are looking for like possibilities. And I think, for a lot of times in the beginning, it was always like restrictions in the sense that we were given in regards to him. And so, for me, it just kind of like, pushed me in a sense to be like, he's going to rewrite, the book on this diagnosis. He's going to be the one in which that people are going to have testimonies on and all this stuff. And I was like, well, I got to do my part, in a sense of just being who I'm supposed to be for him. And it led me a lot of unique places in a sense of just kind of trusting that. And I think that's where the faith part comes in, because if I have to surrender to anything, especially when it comes to your children, listen, you got to give that up. You got to give that
That
control up.
ego, that all that,
All of that, And so I went through all the emotions of a father, you know what I'm saying, with a son diagnosed. I had plans for him, you know what I mean? Like,
It's
yeah,
another
I had
mourning process, right?
the
It's another
mourning
thing to
process
mourn,
again, right? And so longing for a lot of these different things in a sense that, once I became a father, I realized like we're, small, like really minute, to the bigger purpose of what I was here to do. And so, yeah, so, being here with the Raiders has been that's been that challenge because he's still in Florida. And, just picking up, moving in the middle of COVID and just being replanted here. For me, it was like, it came with its own challenges because it was like, man, like dream job, dream scenario, dream everything. But like, it also, you have to deal with the reality of like the things that aren't.
the
Right.
separation and all of that.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
so, that experience for me was one that, really also put this into perspective as well. I think I love what I do. I love what I get to do. But ultimately, like at the end of the day, I realized very quickly this is a job. Like
The
this
job.
is this is
They'll put
very
somebody else in your office with two walls. But you said two
right.
walls and a window. Like they'll put somebody
Right.
else right
It
there.
will be redecorated before I
Yeah,
can even get my stuff out,
it's a
So
job.
I think I still carry a little bit of that in a sense of being cut by the Raiders before, for the first
Yeah.
3 years I probably
Yeah.
came in here and I always
You
had
was
that
waiting like they come and
little,
get me. It's today today.
what I
Like
mean? Like you're not on that side of the building, dude. You gotta worry about
Yeah.
that. But still it was hard to disconnect my body from the experience, but now in a sense of, got engaged,
Oh,
have 2 months old.
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And for me, that was like a big part of me moving out here was that
Yeah.
finding family. I'm able to kind of, in a sense, have a life in which, I envisioned when I was in grad school doing all these things. And I was like, you know what? It'll be cool in a sense to have that fulfillment of like family. And
Yeah.
so, now in a sense, being able to prioritize that and just be present now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that 10 month old, he's agile, moving, about to
Ooh.
start walking. And
Ooh.
it's like, sometimes, I really catch myself on just like, wow, like, you know what I mean? I'm somebody's dad, one.
Yes.
But also in a sense that like, to have children, I think really just humbles you to the core of like, yeah, like, you realize that like everything that I do, honestly, like in the space of social work is cool and all that's great. But ultimately like their legacy is one of the things that I want them to have. And it's like, not having my father growing up, I always in a sense have to try to anticipate what my legacy would be like,
Yeah.
right? And so now in a sense I'm able to, give them something and they're gonna have this long last name and they'll have to deal with it, but they'll be all right.
You hooked them up with a little hyphenated situation. So them babies probably got four names. The first name, a middle name, but a hyphenated last name.
They gonna have a
My
couple
word.
days.
They don't have to get the double line on the passport and the ID cards and stuff.
Yes.
But what it really sounds like, the way you found find the balance and harmony is an acceptance of work is work, home is home, and you know which one is more important, right? Like, you
Yeah.
know, not just knowing which one is more important, but you behave in the ways of being able to show which is more important for you, which is your family and your home.
Yeah.
Like, work is a thing, it'll come and go, but so many folks, they center, like, they try to build their life around work. And what I think COVID taught a lot of us is that you can't do that.
You can't hit your identity
You can't do
that.
that. Like, if that's just,
Yeah.
that's not sustainable, that's not healthy, and that's how you don't last in this field that way. And so I want to transition us to two of my last favorite questions that I like to. Well, actually, before we get to that, I do just want to make sure we mention, because from the Black male perspective, this licensure process, if you got time to just answer that question, are you pursuing licensure? What's going on with that?
Yeah, so I got my LMSW, got my certificate right over here. I have my LMSW in the state of Nevada. And so I last year I took a stab at the LCSW, right? So I went into this test. I'm like, man, I got this. I'm going here. I'm gonna knock it out. And I missed it by 2 points.
Oh, God damn.
I was like, dog. All right, okay. I was like, you know what? I didn't give myself enough time to study. I just need one more crack at it. Apply for the because now if you miss it by less than 10, you can take
You can
it.
do it quicker. You can, yeah.
Like, you know what? I just need to take it again. I just need to see it. I know exactly where I messed up at. Took it again, missed it by 7 points. So, I'm not done with it. I ain't done with it. A part of me too is I think when I first came into this role, and I gotta shout out my mentors, the people who supported me, Anthony Gonzalez, my clinical supervisor. He was a gem for me, just being one, a Hispanic clinician,
Yeah.
but also just being a good dude, a solid dude in the field that I felt like, you know what, I really, aspired to do the things that he's done. And so, for me, it was like I was dabbling in DBT.
Okay.
He does a lot of the DBT work in a sense, and I was a part of their like clinical supervision group.
Yeah.
In the sense of kind of just going through and learning the DBT skills. And so since I've taken this role, honestly, I've had to learn a whole new discipline.
Yes, you have.
You know what I mean? And
Yes, you
so
have.
It's hard. It's hard in the sense to prepare for an exam. I'm working on a certification now, with diversity, a certified diversity executive certification. So, man, you look at these exams and the questions, and it's like it's not even the content,
It's not even
it's
the
the way
work.
they frame these questions. And I'm like,
Yeah.
you know what I mean? So honestly, for me, I do envision becoming an LCSW. I do want to become an LCSW, but I mean, my passion, honestly, I would say, from a clinical perspective, is I really want to support, those who really want to serve others. Like I always, in a sense, want to be like the clinician's clinician, in a sense. I
Yeah.
love direct practice. I love seeing clients, but
Supporting
there's
the
a
people
lot.
matters, and they
Correct.
need more folk like you, like at that level.
Correct. And I
Yeah.
just feel like, I just feel like, especially for, young clinicians that are coming into the field and, just want to see themselves in unique spaces. I want to be able to provide that, whether
Yeah.
be through supporting them through mentorship, whether it be just through supervision. And so, like, ultimately, that's what I see myself doing once I do get licensed.
Okay,
I've been
damn,
seeing
2 points, 7 points.
2 points, man. I was hot.
That test gotta
Listen,
go. That test gotta
listen.
go.
And I was like, I didn't even go back. My first time, I was like, I'm not gonna go back. I ain't gonna change no answers. And I thought about changing, a couple. Nah, I ain't touching it. I ain't gonna. And when I saw that paper say failed and it told me 2 points, it took me at least a month to get over it because I was so mad. I was mad. Then I took it again and I failed and I was like, all right, cool. We're gonna move on. And so, at this point, licensure I do think is similar to that passport in a sense, depending on what you want to do with
What you
it.
want to do with
But
it? It's
again,
not necessary.
it does bind you.
It does. I
It
can't
does
wait to let
bind
mine go. I talk about that all the time. Like, I can't wait to get on the other side of just not having to renew a license because it does keep you from doing a lot of
you. It
things.
does keep, it
Yeah.
does. And I think, for me, it's just, at the right time, I'll be able to refocus and get that done. But for the most part, when it
You already know
happens.
you about to have you about to have a little, not a little. It's gonna be a big counseling agency, and it's gonna be focused on like athletes and shit. You're gonna have a whole mental health practice with like clinicians and clients. I see the vision. Just don't forget about me when you make
Listen, and the thing is
it.
like,
I
and
see it.
the part about it is like, is especially as how you're explaining
I
it,
see it.
honestly, like when I got this role, that's how my mind has always thought. It's
Yeah.
like in my mind, I'm forward planning to
Yeah.
what I truly want to do. I feel like right now this is opportunity work,
To help.
right? And to put you in
I
that
see the
space,
vision.
but I'm like, you know what? Honestly, that's where my mind goes. I
Yeah.
still have a passion for transitional
You
living. I
got
still have a passion for group home.
you
Listen.
have access to over 900 potential clients. I already see a vision.
Yeah, we got a database. We got a database. So yeah, we'll eventually, pioneer in that space. But yeah, but I think, yeah, just even being able to, to have other avenues in this field is so important, because again, like you can spend many years as a clinician and really just serve in direct practice, but at a certain point, you do want to explore, you do want to find out kind of, and again, I see how, in a sense, how you've been able to utilize your platform, right? Again, consulting is important.
It is.
Going into these spaces and making sure that they have great consultants,
It is.
is
Access to good
really,
information. That's
listen,
what a lot of people are just missing is access to good information to help them think
yes.
differently, to help undo some of the things they have been taught and to reprogram themselves. Because a lot of people have just been programmed and conditioned and need to just be deprogrammed through good information. And a solid consultant, which is what they like to call us, can help do that for like individuals, organizations, universities, and groups. So, yeah, I see the
That's.
vision. Trust me, I see it. I
I'm
see it.
glad you see it,
We
Kim.
need we gonna need to talk off this microphone. I see the vision. So my last two questions, which are my favorite questions to ask people, the first one is all about the way that we are reclaiming just the term hood rat, right? What does hood rat shit look like for you? So like for me, I be watching Tubi movies. You might catch me at brunch. All kinds of things. But like, what does hood rat shit look like for you?
Man, we went on a Tubi, we went on a Tubi run for a good moment. I
You and
mean,
your fiance?
they have some movies out there. I'm talking about, like, you just be like,
They
Why are we
so
watching
bad, they
this?
so good.
You'd be like, why are we watching this? 45 minutes later, you're like, ooh.
Stuck. Stuck.
To Miss Run, very much my selection of music. I am, people always say, like, oh, you like rap music? I said, no, I like trap music. Like, I grew up
Very much
Jeezy,
so.
you know, very much. I like, you know, if I don't smell fumes in my car while I'm driving to work, I want to kind of have this feeling that I am on the way to the
I love
band.
it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kodak Black,
Cook up a little something. Of course you
you
like
know, a
Kodak.
little
That's that
Troy,
Florida in you.
Kodak in there, you know. But yeah,
What's
I
that
mean,
baby name? Young and Ace. Do they still be listening to Young and Ace? That's the one from Jacksonville that got shot.
oh yeah, that one is a
Is
little,
he?
it's a little
The
kid
kids used
from.
to listen to Young and Ace. And then that little boy, Poppy or something. I don't know. Some little
And
boy.
honestly, that it's the kids, because when I used to work with kids, like they would introduce me to
You
music,
had to know.
start listening to so and so, and I'm like, now I'm in the car and I'm bumping this, and I'm like, I shouldn't be doing this. But at the end of the
Just
day, it
turn it
speaks to
up.
my soul. And I don't know what it does, but it just, I don't know why. But yeah, that's just my thing. So yeah, definitely music. I don't know if it's hood rat in the sense, but I
Anything
started
could be hood rat.
golf.
I love
Honestly,
it.
I
Hell
feel
yeah.
like that is one of the most revolutionary things that you can do as a black man, is to go
Yeah.
golf.
Hell yeah. You
Yeah.
disrupt so many things by just showing up as
Listen, the
you.
looks you get, you know what I'm saying?
Love
Especially if
it.
you go out there and hit some shots,
I
because
love
I
it.
started playing when I moved out here. And you know, I would go to the course, and I at first, you know, I had that wrestling with, you know, oh man, I don't want to go out there and do this, do that, and I don't know the game like that. And then I had to get over that piece. And then I got the chance to play with some black guys, like some brothers, older dudes.
Yes.
And like, I fell in love with the game. And of course, that's all retired football players want to do. But when I got on the course with them, it really, in a sense, like, one, you're just so present. You don't have your phone. You just got, you like, you literally just riding with another man, talking, having conversation. Go out there, hit the ball. If it goes straight, cool. If it don't, pick it up, drop it
Try
somewhere.
again.
You know what I mean? But yeah, that to me was just like one of the things, in a sense of like, you know, okay, I don't have, you know, a lot of different spaces in a sense to connect with, you know, black men outside of just, you know, work and different things like that. But yeah, the golf course has been that for me. It's been, you know, eye-opening, and I just feel like
Love
it's
it.
revolutionary anytime I see another brother out there
Just
playing golf.
out there. I love it. All right, my last question for you, and I frame it this way because, as I mentioned earlier, and I mentioned always, I'm really big on people dreaming about their life after social work, right? Like, this is not the end of it, should not be the end of anybody's story. And so, when you think about when it's time for you to step away from this field and this work, the way you have known it for as long as you have practiced in it, what are you hoping to leave behind?
My legacy in this work.
Yeah.
You know what? That's it's interesting. I have something that I wrote down, you know what I mean? I haven't told nobody out loud yet. But ultimately, like, you know, for me, it's like when I came into the field, or when I got introduced to the field, like you said, just not seeing, you know, people that essentially that look like me. Was one of the things that I always want to sense, like, I get, you can imagine, I'm sure you get the influx of people who reach out to you, message you. I just want to know, they want to pick your brain. They want, you know what I mean? They want to get insight to, you know, to your greatness. And, you know, for me, I'm always encouraged by that. I had a conversation with another LCSW today, and, you know, encouraging conversation. But, you know, ultimately, I don't want to be, I don't want to be like that rock star that I claimed to be before. You know what I mean? My views on this thing has really
Right.
changed. You know what I mean? And I think just the evolution of you know, where I am now, and just, I think there's a sense of peace and reassurance that I have internally. And so, like, I'm not aspiring to be like, you know, this and that. I truly believe that these things are for me. So for me, it's like, it'll happen, right? But they're not at the forefront of like what's driving me
Yeah.
anymore. Like, I used
Yeah.
to, you know, and again, for a Capricorn, that's really hard and challenging, because
Shit,
again,
tough, because we like
you know, when
to.
you establish in your mind that you want to do something, listen,
That's what's gonna get done.
it's gonna get done, right? And so I literally have to like position my mind to see other things as opportunities of things to get done, right? And so, you know, for me right now, it's like, I gotta plug my brother in. My brother is honestly my inspiration. He's my younger brother, but he opened a camera store right in Brooklyn, heart of Brooklyn. Analog, only analog. So they don't sell digital cameras. They don't,
Oh,
Listen, and so my brother, I watched him literally drop out of school to pursue photography. And again, my
That's a
mom was like,
freedom. Oh, that's a
what are you
freedom.
doing? You know what I mean? Like, what are you doing? His first job was literally going to kindergarten, taking pictures of kids. You know what I mean? And like his courageousness in the sense to like, listen, I'm gonna build this business and people are gonna come. And he's like, I'm just gonna sell film cameras. And he started this business in the middle of the pandemic. He got some investment money for GoFundMe. People supported him. He just asked for $20,000. They gave him $30,000. A bunch of people came together and he bought inventory and now his store is taking off. And so seeing that
What's the
to
name
me
of
is
it?
photodom.nyc. But like to really see his vision take off, and I remember us sitting down, you know, writing out what things that we wanted to do. And he always talked about this vision that he had from this camera store. And you know, seeing him do that to me was kind of like, I mean, you don't have to have, you know what I mean? Like you don't have to have, you know, everything in a sense figured out
Done.
in a sense for you to do something that you want to do. And I don't know if I've actually discovered what I truly ultimately want to do. Like, I'll be honest, you
And
know,
that's fine.
I have plans to resonate from this field as well, right? And
Yes.
so, you know, I haven't really put in too much consideration. In a perfect ideal world, what I would love to do or venture into, and I'm 50-50 on as far as how I want to be involved in it, but I do want to venture into academia, right? I do want
I
to,
can see that.
yeah, I do want to support students because again, I was that student, you know what I mean? And I had professors that were adjuncts that were, you know, in the field doing the work, right, as they were teaching it. And for me, those were the professors that stood out to me because they conceptualize it a little bit differently than just the textbooks. And so, you know, for me, as I get older and, you know, maybe when my hair gets a little more gray, I can see me being a professor or something going into, you know, these spaces and, you know, just providing some insight, you know, just sharing, you know, what kind of got me there. But ultimately, you know, yeah, I haven't really ventured in too deep into like what that looks like. But like, if my brother, if this business really does take off, listen, he will have a DEI guy
See what I'm
as a part
saying?
of his, you know what I
As part
mean?
of
And
that camera
so,
company.
listen, and like that's how strongly I feel about him and the
Yeah.
work he does. And so, you know, for me, it's just like I'm very open to the idea of you know, exploring different avenues. Our goal right now is to buy property in Jamaica, where my mom is from, and you know, just build something there. And so, you know, if that lends to doing some service work in
Then
between that
cool.
and kind of, you know, kind
If
of building out
not.
some stuff, yeah, like then that would be cool too. But, you know, in the meantime, you know, I'm just going to prepare. I think, you know, I
And
heard it
enjoy.
and enjoy it, right? Because, like,
And
I heard
enjoy.
this quote one time and it says, opportunity doesn't look like opportunity to the unprepared, right? And so a lot of times people want to do things, but they don't even take the time to just sharpen their own blade, you know what I'm
To
saying, when
get
the
ready
time
for it.
comes. And so, you know, for me, I'm like, people ask me every day, like, what are you in the NFL now? Like, what's your ultimate goal? And I'm like, I don't have a
You just know, I mean, it sounds like your goal is to be prepared for whatever's next.
like that's it. I just make sure that when opportunity presents itself, that I'm in the best position in a sense to either accept it or walk away from it. Like, I want to be in that ultimate control phase of it, right? And so, either way, I mean, I'll be at peace with regardless of how or where I end up or where it, you know, looks. But I never, in a sense, thought that these roles existed. So for me to
Better
go out and
plan.
claim that I want to do something when the roles that I've had were like, you know, the first time the organizations have had those roles, to me, kind of just speaks to like, I don't want to sell myself short and just be out here claiming stuff that, you know, there may be more to it. So.
I mean, it sounds like a part of your legacy is pulling people up, but also pulling people alongside your journey. And it seems like you have opened doors that haven't been opened before, and you have an intention of leaving them open when you step out of the roles,
Absolutely.
right? So, like, that's kind of what I hear when you're kind of surmising that you're not really sure what you want to do or where
I
you want to
mean,
end up. But I feel like what you kind of know for a fact is you are putting other people in positions because you are kind of showing away and bringing folks along with you and making sure that the doors aren't closing when you step aside or when you don't take a new opportunity that might be somebody else's. Like, a
absolutely.
lot of people don't approach it that way. So, like, shout out to you and much appreciation to you for seeing it like that. I have.
Actually, honestly, a great point because as I think about that, so we have four social workers currently in our building,
That's
right? And
dope.
to me, that special warms my
Because
heart
you were
because
number one.
so
Were
we
you
have a
number
team
one?
clinician. Our team clinician, she serves the players. She's
Yeah.
LCSW. The role that I had before has been filled by another LCSW. And so essentially those two, she supports former players, one supports current players, and then I support employees from a DEI standpoint. And then our community relations director is a BSW, and she went to Berkeley. So just having, you know what I mean, in the sense where she touches the community. And so like to me, that's cool. You know what I mean? Like that's
That's
the stuff that
dope.
I, you know, get excited about and all that stuff. But like to your point, like, you know, definitely I don't want to be, you know, one of the people in the sense to be like, I was one of the only
Yeah.
to ever, you know,
Ever
I don't want
join.
that. I don't want that. Yeah, I don't want that, right? I want to be able to look back and say, man, like, you know, I got a chance to meet, you know, these people as they were coming up or
Yeah.
aspiring to be something because I know people now are able to say that about my story. You know what I mean? There's people
Yep.
that are attached to my story because they had a conversation with me when I was just curious, you know what I mean,
Yep.
in school and just wanted to, you know, touch them or just reach out to them and be like, hey, you know, you're doing something I really want to do. And for me, it's like, you know, the fact that they responded, the fact that they were receptive, to me, that always sticks out to me. So they get to be a part and claim my journey, and I want to be able to be a part of others and be able to, you know, have them in a sense be able to claim their journey. So that'd be pretty cool legacy, I think.
That'd be pretty dope. That'd be
Yeah.
pretty dope. I have deeply valued and appreciated our conversation and time. I knew this was gonna be good. I knew that I was like, oh, there's a story in there. And I was like, we gotta get that story captured for people to be able to hear and learn and grow from. That was good, huh? Talk about making some damn lemonade, right? Like life kept giving him lemon after lemon after lemon, and he made some lemonade. Like, shout out to the cousin, Devin, for real, for real. I am hopeful that y'all were able to glean something from our conversation. I'm not too sure that I can contribute or offer up a good black word outside of anything that may have been shared from the time of being in community and conversation with Devin. And so I'm gonna leave us here. And I will connect with y'all next week. Like as we round out, nah, almost told a bold lie. It's all, look, I'm trying to end social work month before it's time to be over with. We still got 2 more weeks to turn up. So I will catch y'all next week with another episode in honor of social work month with another dope black social worker doing some amazing work in community. And so as always, y'all, please remember to take care of your heart so that we can take care of each other, because at the end of the day, we are absolutely all that we got out here in these streets. Y'all be well, and we will chat next time.